This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off this week. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on December 16th, 2024.
President-elect Donald Trump assembling now what could be the wealthiest administration in history.
The Trump cabinet will have more billionaires and centimillionaires than any in history.
Never before in American history have the people on top had so much political power. We can't go around the world saying, oh, well, you know, in Russia, Putin has an oligarchy. Well, we got an oligarchy here, too.
Yes, we do. But ours is more like a broligarchy, really, isn't it?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. We're also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, in Rochester, New York on WRFZ, way down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on your internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. These are your public airwaves, so I want you to give me a call today if you like at 818-985-5735, because I think today, Desi Doyen, if I'm not mistaken, I think today is our last chance to open the phones before we take a break next week. For the holidays?
That is correct. So get them in now while you can.
Yeah, get them in now. It's also our last chance, by the way, to stay, to stay on the good side of Donald Trump. Because, you know, we have no choice at this point. We've got to bend the knee to Donald Trump, as I will discuss in a bit. I do have a few things to talk about first, but I will welcome your calls on that or anything else that you'd like to ring in before the end of the year as the Trump 2.0 administration readies to cement its oligarchy, its kleptocracy, its kakistocracy, look it up, and its autocracy in the coming year. As his Project 2025 has promised, he will be coming after the nonprofit access that we enjoy to the airwaves, to the public airwaves, enjoyed by networks like Pacifica Radio, which is named specifically on page 247 of that document of Project 2025, written by former Trump officials that will be used as the manifesto for his second term. Many of our affiliate stations are, in fact, members of the Pacifica Radio Network, including KPFK, our flagship station here in Los Angeles. So to that end, we are in fun drive here again at KPFK. Don't worry, you're not going to miss a minute of the broadcast, but KPFK can use your support right now more than ever. KPFK Pacifica. So if you call in to talk to me about whatever you like, hit option number one. But if you're calling to donate to the station, and I hope you will, please hit option number two to donate whatever you can to help keep Pacifica Radio on your public airwaves as we face an unprecedented challenge, I think it's fair to say,
in the coming years. And if you are listening to another station other than KPFK, you're listening to the broadcast on another station, please, please consider supporting and donating to them as well to help them stay on the air. This is no longer a drill. Anyway, we'll get to your calls in a bit. If you follow the broadcast closely, you likely know that whenever we cover election results, we always warn, well, a couple of things. Number one, when those results are first announced, and as we report them on the air the following day, they have not been verified as being accurate by any human being. That, you know, the results that we report on the night following the night of the election or the day following election day or in the immediate days thereafter are almost entirely 100% computer tabulated results. They are not verified for accuracy by any human being, which we try to warn you about. And then the other thing we always try to warn you about, and frankly, probably bore the crap out of you when with repeating it, is that problems that are found in the election results or the tabulations are often not discovered, if they are discovered at all, until many days or weeks or months, and in some cases, years after Election Day. We always try to give you a warning about that as well. Well, today, more than a month since Election Day, we have got a case in point out of Ashtabula County, Ohio, from the Star Beacon in Ashtabula. As they reported just last week, the Ashtabula County Board of Elections certified two levy recounts last week, after both measures had failed in the original tabulation, the original computer tabulation. But then it was discovered that they actually passed. They were actually adopted by voters, approved after a hand recount in the days just leading up to last week's certification of their passage. The two tax levies were for a permanent improvement levy of $2.5 million for the Ashtabula Area City Schools. The second one was a $1 million levy for a local cemetery district. Issue 26, the one for the city schools, went from 5,001 votes in favor and 5,056 votes against to 5,286 in favor and 5,088 against. So in the hand count of the ballots, both for and against the measure picked up votes that were not tallied by the computers originally, though the for voters picked up a lot more and ended up winning the day. More than a month after city residents there had been told that the levy to improve schools had failed. It didn't. Issue 32, the levy for the cemetery district, saw a similar increase in both for and against, and that went also from losing initially to winning. And here's the even more troubling part of all of this. The errors in the tabulation for those two issues ended up being noticed only due to an error discovered in a third levy issue on the ballot for the Ashtabula Township's Fire Department. In that case, an error was discovered in the township's print-on-demand ballot system made by the nation's largest voting system vendor, ES&S, and they noticed that there was a problem that required a hand count of the ballots in that race, that fire department race, on December 4th. So the problem was essentially discovered just shy of 1 month following the November 5th election. In that case, the hand recount found that the fire department levy passed by 59 votes after it had initially lost by 13 votes. So now we're up to three contests that were incorrectly tabulated by the computers. And it was this.
Thank God somebody noticed.
Well, it was this fire department one that led people to understand, well, wait a minute, I think we got problems in these other races as well. According to the Board of Elections director out there, the error with those printed ballots, quote, affected column two on the back side of the ballots, only where some ballot issues were presented to be voted on. The superintendent of the Ashtabula Area City Schools said the news of the levy's failure had initially been heartbreaking, but she was, quote, filled with so many emotions of happiness, excitement, and relief upon hearing that the levy measure actually passed. She said she's grateful and thankful for the community and the voters who are for passing the renewal levy. Apparently, one of the local high schools just had a lot of damage after 5.5 feet of snow resulted in a partially collapsed roof at the beginning of this month. This measure, of course, will help repair the damage to reopen the school. So it's a small raise, but big local consequences. Board of Elections Director in Ashtabula County, Charlie Fry, said that the ballot uploading error happened when the Ohio Supreme Court changed the language of a different issue on the ballot. On issue one, they changed it on September 16, and the board had to change ballots, the ballot programming very quickly to reflect the change. Fry said that the change ended up shifting the ballot slightly, but that led to errors in the machine reading of the ballots in all of the races that followed the one that was changed by the state Supreme Court. And since it was issue number one that was changed, well, that forced the change to every issue after it, apparently, on the ballot. Every other one was thrown off. Fry said that the tabulators were either reading a yes for a no or a no for a yes. He added, quote, just from conversations I had, there were a few other counties in Ohio that had that problem, but it would just come back as an unreadable ballot in their case. Now, I love how the Star Beacon, the local paper here, describes it. Quote, the county-specific ballot error only affected ballots, ballot items from issue one downward. So that would mean all of the county issues on that ballot. Fry said, quote, we recounted every levy on the ballot to make sure. Board member Susan Hagen said she was thankful to board staff and volunteers for their work. Quote, this hiccup really shows the checks and balances are there and the votes are counted. A hiccup? Okay. I mean, sure, in this case, because that original hand count revealed that all of the rest of the issues on the ballot were tabulated incorrectly. If nobody had noticed that error, would anyone have ever noticed all of the rest of them? A post-election spot check of the presidential, U.S. Senate, and clerk of court races in Ashtabula found that the problem did not affect any of those races on the front of the ballot. But, of course, what about all of the other counties in Ohio and in Georgia and in North Carolina and in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, etc., that did not hand count their ballots to make sure that there were no programming errors on the ballot? What about those? It seems to me that if the county had not discovered the problem after hand counting that one race, they may never have known about all of the other races that were also affected. And where voters approved tax levies that were initially reported as having been rejected by the voters. This week on Tuesday, December 17th, presidential electors selected by the popular vote in each state will go to their state capital to cast their vote for either Donald Trump or Kamala Harris based on the computer reported results in each of those 50 states. Those results are either right or wrong. They either match the intent of the voters or they do not. Without hand counting, at least partially, we will never know. Now, we've been reporting on this program since Election Day, and in fact for years in advance of the November election, that Republican supporters of Donald Trump had unlawfully breached proprietary voting systems, made copies of the software, shared that proprietary information from these very sensitive voting systems broadly across the internet with other fellow supporters of Donald Trump in a whole bunch of battleground states. And you can see how sensitive these systems are because if you knock them off by just one line, the entire ballot can be mistabulated by the computers. And that's why a bunch of voting system and cybersecurity experts, as we have also reported on this program, sent letters to the Kamala Harris campaign and to the Biden Department of Justice, urging them to seek a hand count of at least a portion of ballots from the November 5th race in the most closely divided states. To my knowledge, neither the Harris campaign nor the Biden administration took up that plea from those experts to check the results by hand, just to make sure there was neither manipulation or error, not unlike what the folks in Ashtabula County, Ohio, were lucky enough to have discovered just before they would have incorrectly certified results for at least three issues on that ballot that had recorded yes votes as no's and no votes for yeses. Or, who knows, Harris votes for Trump, and Trump votes for Harris. I mean, whatever the results are, right or wrong, in the presidential races or any other that is now apparently all that there will be time to count and find out. We're out of time. So I just wanted to make sure that you heard that unsettling news today, because I have been yelling and screaming about that exact same problem, that exact same thing, for at least 20 years now. That if you don't count those ballots by hand, well, yes could be no, no could be yes, Trump could be Harris, Harris could be Trump. Now, when the Trump campaign back in 2020 was lying to the public about the results, their supporters actually raised enough hell to actually get some post-election hand count audits in states like Arizona and Georgia. And those audits found that the initially reported results were correct, that Joe Biden defeated Donald Trump in those states, and by the way, by even more votes than were originally reported. But I'm glad to know, and I'm glad that they, Trump supporters, got a hand count to find out. And frankly, Harris supporters deserve the same this year. And I would argue that all voters deserve such assurances every year in every election. But apparently, ensuring voters have confidence in the results, apparently that's not necessary. As we've seen over the past 4 years, that didn't cause any problems, did it? When that lack of assurance allowed a cretin like Donald Trump to go out and to lie to everyone about the results, because we don't allow the public to oversee the results, to oversee hand tallies of the results, so they can know if they are tabulated correctly or incorrectly, to make sure that they are accurate and counted as per voter intent. Donald Trump will soon be president again, and hopefully that's what the voters actually wanted. Unfortunately, we'll never really be able to know, will we?
Well, I think you make an excellent point about the fact that Trump's voters did work very hard and made a lot of noise and got those recounts. But it seems to me that the corporate media really criticizes harshly anyone who decides that, oh, my goodness, we should maybe verify that the tally is accurate. And it seems like to me that they do criticize Democrats more harshly than they do Republicans. They're sort of used to Republicans saying it now, so they just let them say
it. Listen,
but it doesn't mean that Democrats shouldn't fight for it anyway.
And it does. There's a difference between saying, hey, we should count the ballots to make sure that the results are accurate, and going out and claiming there is fraud,
exactly,
and claiming the election was stolen, and claiming there was massive voter fraud and non-citizens voting, when there is evidence for none of those things in the 2020 race. And yet they've spent the last 4 years doing that. And they were able to harangue enough election officials that they were able to get counts, hand counts in a number of places.
And that's the point that I'm trying to make, that that should be something that does happen regardless of if the press says mean things about you.
Got any questions about any of this? Any thoughts? Give us a call, 818-985-5735. If you are in our live Southern California listening area, or you are listening live via our web stream at kpfk.org, here's something we do know. And listeners to this program almost certainly have known this, I would hope, for years. But Donald Trump's claims about the Biden family accepting bribes from a Ukrainian energy company, they have always been evidence-free bunk. And, yes, disinformation. Purposely spreading misinformation. It's called disinformation. And that disinformation was, yes, emanating directly from Russia. But it was laundered and circulated in this country, first by Republicans in the U.S. and by then incurious media dupes, or worse. In any event, in federal court on Monday, that point was underscored specifically. A former FBI informant pleaded guilty on Monday to lying about a phony bribery scheme involving President Joe Biden and his son Hunter that became central to the failed and or abandoned Republican impeachment inquiry in Congress, as AP reports today. Claims that were at the heart of Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and Republicans' years-long false claims about the so-called Biden crime family. And, in fact, those claims were actually central to the first impeachment of Donald Trump, who had attempted to strong-arm Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky into announcing a state investigation into Joe and Hunter Biden that all honest brokers have known for years was entirely bogus. A matter that was raised falsely, only as a way to try to harm Joe Biden, who Trump expected correctly would be his main opponent during the re-election contest in 2020. Now, Alexander Smirnov on Monday entered his guilty plea to a felony charge in connection with the bogus story, along with a tax evasion charge stemming from a separate indictment accusing him of concealing millions of dollars of income. Oh, so the guy was who was guilty of financial crimes was claiming that the Bidens were guilty of financial crimes. Go figure. And Republicans made a superstar out of this guy who was lying from top to bottom. Go figure. Prosecutors and the defense have agreed to recommend a sentence of between 4 and 6 years in prison for this guy when he is sentenced next month. Smirnov falsely told his FBI handler that executives from the Ukrainian energy company named Burisma had paid President Biden and Hunter Biden $5 million each at some point around 2015. That, it turns out, was a lie. It was completely made up. Smirnov had been an informant for more than a decade for the FBI when he publicly made the explosive allegations about the Bidens in June of 2020. An FBI field office investigated the allegations and recommended that the case be closed just 2 months later in August of 2020. According to the charging documents on Monday, no evidence has emerged that Joe Biden acted corruptly or accepted bribes as president or in his previous office as vice president. During a September 2023 conversation with investigators, Smirnov also claimed that the Russians probably had recordings of Hunter Biden because a hotel in Ukraine's capital where he had stayed was, quote, wired and under their control. Information, he said, was passed along to him by four high-level Russian intelligence-affiliated officials. In fact, as it turns out, Hunter Biden had never traveled to Ukraine, as is noted in Smirnov's indictment on Monday. So just to make sure you're following along here, the information about this guy, Smirnov, and his interviews with the FBI officials that Republicans in Congress cited, in Congress, over and over again, as the basis for their now failed impeachment inquiry against Joe Biden, those claims came from Smirnov, who received them from Russian intelligence officials. Republicans took information, or in this case, fully evidence-free disinformation from Russian intelligence agents hoping to harm Joe Biden and used it as the basis to impeach the American president by laundering it through the U.S. Congress. Smirnov, who claimed to have contacts with Russian intelligence-affiliated officials, told authorities after his arrest this year that, quote, officials associated with Russian intelligence were involved in passing him the story about Hunter Biden. Of course, shows like this have been making that case for years. Those programs and those so-called news networks who have been misinforming you otherwise or disinforming you otherwise should be held in disdain for having done so. And some of those media outlets are now paying a price in order to stay on Donald Trump's good side anyway. We won't. At least I won't. Not here on the broadcast. But these large companies are doing it largely because they are owned by huge corporations who cannot afford to get on Donald Trump's bad side as he takes a second term in office. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back to talk about that. And then your calls at 818-985-5735 on any of that or anything else that's on your mind. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are clever enough to be listening to the broadcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the broadcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll get to your calls momentarily at 818-985-KPFK. Nearly three dozen of President-elect Donald Trump's, three dozen of his picks to serve in his incoming administration donated to his campaign or to the deep-pocketed outside groups that worked to elect him, according to a CNN analysis of federal campaign records. They range from tech billionaire Elon Musk, who has emerged as the single largest disclosed political donor of the 2024 presidential election and almost certainly in American history, after spending more than $250 million to get Donald Trump elected. It ranges from, but he's not the only one. It ranges from Musk to others close to Trump that were tapped for key roles throughout the government. In all, eight of Trump's cabinet picks, led by Linda McMahon, the billionaire wrestling magnate that Trump has selected to oversee the Education Department, and their spouses, they donated in all more than $37 million combined from their personal accounts to aid Donald Trump. According to the review, underscoring the proliferation of ultra-rich Americans now poised to shape U.S. policy in the coming second Trump administration. Musk has not been selected for a formal cabinet job, but he is helping to guide a new so-called Department of Government Efficiency initiative, or DOGE, which is not actually a government department at all. It's largely the equivalent of an outside advisory board, though Musk has also played a pivotal role in the presidential transition, often offering his views on job candidates. But you know what? That's what more than $250 million begins to get you, I guess. The total donations from Trump's current cabinet picks marks a surge from his first term. Five members of his original cabinet had donated nearly $8 million to his committees or to the major outside groups that were supporting him. That, according to a review of campaign reports. In his second administration, the donations of cabinet members and their spouses named so far by Trump, which does not include Elon's $277 million, just the cabinet members, totals more than $37 million. Compare that to the $8 million in Donald Trump's first term, which frankly was already obscene enough. By way of comparison, the sums spent to aid Trump in 2024 far exceed the donations that President Joe Biden's cabinet members contributed to help him win the White House back in 2020. According to FEC records, a dozen members of Biden's cabinet reported donations to his campaign or to major super PACs involved in the 2020 election, giving less than $100,000 in total. Compare that to the $37 million from the Trump campaign named so far. Here was Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders on Sunday on Meet the Press.
We are moving rapidly into an oligarchic form of society. Never before in American history have so few billionaires, so few people had so much wealth and so much power. Never before has there been so much concentration of ownership, sector after sector, power of Wall Street, and never before in American history, and we better talk about this, have the people on top had so much political power. We can't go around the world saying, oh, well, you know, in Russia, Putin has an oligarchy. Well, we got an oligarchy here, too.
Yeah, we do. And, of course, it's not just the members of the administration who are part of that oligarchy. Media outlets have and tech outlets have been trampling each other to shell out $1 million donations in tribute to the new king of the oligarchs and the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. The most recent huge corporations to announce their tributes were Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, who announced that he would be giving $1 million to the Trump Inauguration Fund last Wednesday, and then Amazon and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos giving the same $1 million and an additional million in in-kind donation by agreeing to stream Trump's inauguration on Amazon Prime. But Disney-owned ABC News quickly put Zuck and Bezos to shame over the weekend when it was announced that ABC News had agreed to pay $15 million toward Donald Trump's presidential library to settle a defamation lawsuit over George Stephanopoulos's on-air assertion that the president-elect had been found civilly liable for raping writer E. Jean Carroll. Now, in fact, Trump was found liable for sexual assault and abuse and defamation of writer E. Jean Carroll, and two juries had found that he must now pay her more than $88 million in those civil cases. Moreover, and I won't go into details of why this is the case because it kind of gets a bit graphic here, but the judge overseeing Trump's second trial on defamation instructed the jury that in the earlier trial on the sexual assault and abuse claims, it was indeed the case that Trump was found to have raped her, quote, as many people commonly understand the word rape, and that, quote, indeed, the jury found that Mr. Trump, in fact, did exactly that, unquote. So in truth, ABC News almost certainly would have won that defamation case had it gone to trial. That case that Trump had filed against the network and against George Stephanopoulos, and yet they agreed to settle anyway. Why would they do that? Before I give my thoughts on it, I'll just say, hey, give us a call, 818-985-KPFK, if you're listening live and you have thoughts on this. As part of the settlement that was made public on Saturday, ABC News posted an editor's note to its website expressing regret over Stephanopoulos' statement during a March 10 segment on his This Week program. In addition to the $15 million to the Trump Presidential Library, if such a fund ever actually gets set up to create such a library, the network will also pay another $1 million in legal fees to the law firm of Trump's attorney. The settlement agreement describes ABC's presidential library payment as, quote, a charitable contribution, with the money earmarked for a nonprofit organization that is being established in connection with the yet-to-be-built library. But of course, we know that the charitable contribution, we know what that actually is. And at least in my opinion, well, I would love to hear yours, 818-985-KPFK. ABC News, and importantly, more importantly, their owner, the Walt Disney Corporation, well, they know exactly why they decided to go ahead and settle this suit and pay $16 million to settle a lawsuit that they would have easily won. The settlement agreement was signed on Friday, the same day that a Florida judge ordered Trump and Stephanopoulos to sit for separate depositions in the case this week. The settlement meant that the sworn testimony is no longer required, and I'm guessing that Donald Trump is especially happy about that. The $16 million and the bad PR for ABC News, well, that's just the cherry on top for Donald Trump, I suspect. During a live This Week interview with Nancy Mace, Stephanopoulos had claimed that Trump had been, quote, found liable for rape and, quote, defaming the victim of that rape, which was not exactly right, but given the statement of the judge in the second case in particular, certainly it was close enough and would likely have been impossible to prove in court as defamation by ABC News. Even as neither verdict in the Carol Trump cases involved a finding of rape as specifically defined under New York law, at least now. Though, while testifying in April of 2023, Carol told the jurors, quote, I am here because Donald Trump raped me. And when I wrote about it, he said it didn't happen. He lied and shattered my reputation, and I'm here to try and get my life back. The jurors sided with her, with E. Jean Carroll, and she was ultimately awarded verdicts of more than $88 million against Donald Trump, who is appealing both verdicts. So why do you think ABC News decided to bend the knee to Trump here? 818-985-5735 if you're in our live Southern California listening area or you're listening live anywhere via the kpfk.org web stream. I will tell you... Well, what Josh Marshall over at Talking Points Memo has to say about it, essentially, and I can get into more details unless you guys want to call in and give me a shout. But essentially, he's saying, look, these ABC News is a teeny tiny part of the Disney company, which is a $200 billion company. And so for them to pay off $15, $16 million is a drop in the bucket over a news outlet that they don't really care about, that probably loses them money, as opposed to the other $200 billion or so that does mean something to them and that Donald Trump can do something about to hurt them. Same is true with Jeff Bezos giving his $1 million. He doesn't really care about the Washington Post. What he cares about is Amazon, which could face a whole bunch of regulations and lawsuits and everything else from the federal government. That's what these folks care about. That's why they're willing to throw their news outfits over the side and say, yeah, we'll settle. Sure, it was defamation. Here's $16 million to make all of this go away. Please don't hurt us, Mr. Trump. Please don't hurt our main business, Mr. Trump. We don't care about the news business. And that's why independent media makes a difference. If you're owned by a big corporation, CNN is owned by Warner Brothers Discovery. ABC News is owned by Disney, NBC, and MSNBC are owned by Comcast. Well, you don't, if you're owned by a big company, there is no guarantee that you have any independence at all, because what those big companies care about is their big companies, not about this tiny sliver of news, their news division, which ends up losing them money anyway. 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to Daryl in Agoura Hills. Hey, Daryl, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad. Thank you for your show.
You
warned us for years about the perils of electronic voting, and
yep.
Greg Palast has told us about voter suppression. But if we go back a few elections, we had the Brooks Brothers riot and the Supreme Court coup, or we had Reagan's team negotiating with the Iranians to delay the hostage release,
mm-hmm.
or we had Kissinger reaching out to the North Koreans,
mm-hmm.
or Daley suppressing the Republican vote.
Yep.
When was the last honest American election?
Listen, There will always be, and this is another point that I have also been trying to make along with all of this for the past 20 years, is that there will always be, there is too much at stake in American elections. And that starts from a presidential election all the way down to those county tax levies I was talking about at the top of the show. There is too much at stake for people to not try to game these elections, to not try to steal them, to rig them any way they can, which is why it is so important that the public can oversee at the very least, the tallying of these elections so that they can know that at least that was the intent of the voter, even if those voters were misinformed, you know, by guys like Elon Musk, who, you know, lied and, you know, spent $750 million to try to get this guy elected. So I don't know. I don't know if there was ever a fair election. But that is our point, is to fight and to try to improve them. And the only way I've ever figured out how to do that is to make sure the people can oversee them.
Yeah, that's Stalin's maxim, too, I guess.
Stalin's maxim? No, his maxim was it matters who counts the ballots. My maxim is it doesn't matter who counts the ballots if the public gets to oversee that counting to make sure that that count is correct. Make sense?
Fair enough. Thank you for your show.
Thank you, Daryl. Thanks for the call. Much appreciated. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Mike in Torrance. Hey, Mike. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Brad. First off, I just want to say thank you, sir, for your valuable time donating and all the research you do for all of us. Thank you for the people working the phones. I've worked the phones before. I know about that. I think it's gracious of you guys all to be so generous. And I wanted to elaborate as well on the voting system, because mm-hmm. I think this can be something that the whole public needs to know about, because mm-hmm. for some reason, I believe it was there was a mistake with the voting counts.
I don't know if there was or wasn't. But, well, and actually, first of all, thank you, Mike. I appreciate the kind words of thanks. I don't know if there was or wasn't. That's the problem. Nobody does. And, you know, for all of the people who want to assert that it was wrong, who asserted that the results were wrong in 2020, who are asserting that case now, we don't know. And when you have this many people in the population, whether it's in 2020 or in 2024 or any other election, who are concerned about the results, who don't know if the democracy that we hang our hat on here, or we used to, is actually accurate, actually represents the will of the people. Well, you open yourself up to, oh, I don't know, cretins like Donald Trump telling everyone the election was stolen and go storm the Capitol. That's the problem. That's the concern. So I hear what you're saying, Mike. You don't have confidence in the results. I understand. You may be right. You may be wrong. Let's, you know, count votes to find out.
I wish there could be more of this real information out there. And thank you for putting on Bernie Sanders, talking the truth, telling us all about the amount of money that's been spent on that election. That really, really helps enlighten all of us in what's really happening out there. And that kind of truthful information, that true journalism, definitely needs to be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate those kind words. And have a happy holiday, whatever it may be, in the coming weeks. 818-985 KPFK, let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I
wanted to say that instead of all these folks settling, you know, like ABC settling and stuff and going to court and dragging it out, what these folks should have done is just hired Trump's lawyers, you know. they could have dragged it out and maybe got a decent settlement. Who knows?
Well, you're suggesting that Trump's attorneys were better than ABC's, but I don't think they were. As a matter of fact, I think that Trump's attorneys, even if they were representing ABC, they would have taken the same deal, because all of this is not about the truth. All of this is about back scratching. All of this is about the oligarchy. All of this is about the broligarchy. All of this is about guys like, you know, Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and whoever is running Disney at any given time. paying tribute to the incoming king. That's what this is. They don't care. They don't care about the news.
I was just joking anyways about Trump's lawyers. I think they're incompetent. They're probably overpaid if they're paid at all.
And half of them are just wildly corrupt and have lost their licenses, their law license since 2020.
Yeah, they'll be pardoned or whatever. You know, it's like, God, it's enough to drive you mad, you know, and people should be really upset and figure out a way to do something about this because, you know, it's only going to get worse, you know, perhaps, you know. Hopefully not. Hey, I hope you guys have a good holiday. I hope you have time for Mo. And goodbye, Desi, and I'll see you guys later.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. 818-985-KPFK. And just to be clear, by the way, Donald Trump may try to pardon these people and his attorneys if they are charged with federal crimes. So far, to my knowledge, I don't think that they have been. That the guys like John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani and Ken Chesbro and all that are all charged under state courts, state law, if they're charged and or in the case where they have taken away their law license, that's by state or D.C. District law bars, the Bar Association. So there's nothing that Donald Trump can do about either pardoning someone for a state case. There's nothing that Donald Trump can do to restore a crooked lawyer like Rudy Giuliani to restore his license despite being president, despite being a very powerful president, despite being willing to abuse that power to help his friends. At least in those cases, guys like Giuliani are blank out of luck. And by the way, Rudy Giuliani also owes, what is it, $188 million to...
I thought you were going to say he's 188 million years old, but that's not what you were going to say.
Well, yes, I would never say such a thing. He's a very young, what is he, 90, 95?
Young whippersnapper.
So he owes a whole lot of money, and he's in bankruptcy, and his life is ruined because he decided to play along with the lies of Donald Trump. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. The lines are open to anything you might wish to discuss as we head into the holiday season.
Yeah, remember, it's last call for calls right now.
Last call for calls before the new year.
The end of the year, yes.
Before the new year. And then we'll be back after the new year. And it's not the last call for the broadcast. We'll be here all week. But today is our last chance to take calls. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry. How are you, sir?
Good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me, Larry?
Yes, sir. I can. Loud and clear. Thank God. So, Brad, before I make my comment, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
When did you do your very first show on KPFK?
Well, I don't know the exact date. I know that I was a guest and then a guest host sometime back in 2005. So we are pushing about 19 years, about 20 years at this point. Yeah. Why do you ask?
My goodness. What did you do before that?
Well, I was a computer programmer. I was an actor, a director, a writer, stuff like that, where it was, frankly, much easier to make a living than it is to make a living doing a daily radio show. But why are you asking me these questions, Larry? Why are you interviewing me?
I'm just curious, but okay. I'm very impressed, Brad.
Oh, okay.
And having said all that, let me get to my point.
Okay.
On Saturday, KNX Radio in Los Angeles, which is an affiliate of CBS.
KNX News Radio, yes.
Yeah, they ran the Stephanopoulos ABC story, and they trotted out Larry Sabato, who just told direct, blatant lies on the air.
Mm.
And so Sabato said that Judge Lewis Kaplan and his jury didn't rule that Trump raped Miss Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
He said that it was just sexual assault. And KNX left it at that. This blatant lie. So I called in And I told him it was historically inaccurate. I told it was told them it was deceitful. I told them they should pull the story. And then they ran the story every single hour, Saturday, Sunday, and they finally pulled the story Sunday night. So I think the best that we can do, Brad, is to document what happens as it happens and get the word out to each other so that we have a sound understanding of what is taking place. So having said that, I think in the end, I believe that Trump will declare martial law, nullify the Constitution. And your comments, please.
All right. Well, that's a lot, Larry. I will start by saying this, that it's very complicated, and it's particularly complicated to explain on the air what the difference is between what Donald Trump was found liable for to the tune of whatever it was, $80 million, $88 million, versus what they are claiming, what Donald Trump was claiming in the case. The distinction about rape and the type of sexual abuse that was found by the juror and the comments that the judge made about the case, saying, yes, for all intents and purposes, that is rape as it's considered under New York law. And to go into any more detail, I think I can't do, not in the middle of the afternoon on a family program. But thank you for trying to, you know, hold feet to the fire wherever you can. We are all going to have to do that for the next 4 years. And I hope later this week to talk a little bit more about this idea we see here from so many people who are, we will call it militant pessimism, who say, oh, that's it. We're done. We're through. There's nothing we can do. Donald Trump's in charge. America is over. Democracy is over. Well, all of that may be true, but that doesn't keep us from fighting to prevent it from happening, from being the opposition, from doing, from trying to stop them, to tell the truth, to hold these things up, to delay things, to overturn them, to, yes, resist, but be the opposition in all that that may mean. We'll see what happens. Now, Larry, you asked about that Donald Trump will declare martial law. Well, the president of South Korea declared martial law about a week or two ago. It did not go well for that president of South Korea. The martial law lasted for about 6 hours. The military who were sent to guard the parliament there, the National Assembly, in order to prevent the National Assembly from being able to meet to overturn the declaration of martial law, soldiers were sent there. And they didn't really try very hard to keep the lawmakers out. The lawmakers were able to get in. They were able to end the state of martial law. And that president has now been impeached. I think he was finally successfully impeached over the weekend. The prior weekend, his own party prevented him from being impeached by not allowing a vote. As I understand it, over the weekend, they were able to impeach him. We'll see if they're able to remove him. But listen, opposition comes in all forms, and it comes from people like you, Larry, who are hearing something on the radio, knowing it's wrong, trying to hold the feet to the fire of the media, whether it's CBS News, whether it's Pacifica Radio, whether it's me here at the broadcast. We all have to do whatever we can do. We all have to do whatever is our small part. And I thank you for doing that and to not bending the knee to this guy and to this clown, as so many others are apparently willing to do. It's up to you and I and everyone else who is within the sound of my voice to do their best to keep that from happening over the next 4 years. Does that answer your question, Larry?
It does, and bless your heart, and bless your heart too as well, Desi.
There you
Merry go. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate that. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and happy everything else to everyone. 818-985-KPFK. You know, then there's clowns like these guys. Now, mind you, I'm over at Blue Sky now. If you haven't followed me over there yet, I'm there much more than Twitter, which has just become a right-wing sewer of, you know, basically neo-Nazi nonsense. But you'll find me over at Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. But back on Twitter, you you got guys like this guy who calls himself Daniel Sebastian. He listens every week. He hate listens to the Bradcast. We're happy to have him. His Daniel Sebastian, he calls himself. He is Live Life Naked. That's his handle on Twitter, now called X by some. He says, it's 3 p.m. on Monday, so I'm tuning into the Bradcast on KPFK as they push the limits of partisan advocacy under the guise of journalism. How will today's episode exhibit religious reverence for Democrats and China Joe Biden? What, Daniel? He's not Ukraine Joe Biden anymore? What happened? What happened to Hunter Burisma Biden?
All of a sudden, it's like a Mad Libs of bad disinformation.
Yep. That's what they do. That's what they do over there on the Twitter. And guys like this clown, Daniel. Anyway, glad you're listening, Daniel, whoever you may be, wherever you may be. 818-985-KPFK. I know. Okay, I'm going to get a caller who couldn't hold. Tell me what they said real quick, because I want to get to Matt.
I am characterizing it, attempting to characterize it. Said that, you know, we need to be prepared for oligarchy, or the broligarchy, as you called it, the tech takeover of titans of the government. And he called on everybody to help each other, to organize and to combat disinformation and to oppose the oligarchy.
Exactly right. All right. We got about 30 seconds here from Matt in San Luis Obispo. Hey, Matt, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Sorry to give you short shrift here again.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, I'm not surprised about George Snuffleupagus and CBS, and all the corporate toilets lead to the sewer. And that's all the more reason that we need people like you, KPFA, KPFK, Pacifica. And thank you both so much for everything, and have a very wonderful break.
Thank you, Matt. Smartly done. And since Mo didn't call in, you win the award of our final caller of the day. Thank you very much, Matt. My thanks also to all to everybody who called in, to even to those that I could not get to, and for all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Same with tomorrow's show and the next day's show and the next day's show, at least until we're on break. Thank you for your support. Thanks also to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell, the handyman handle. Thank you, Wendell. Appreciate it. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter. Not to mention Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. Stop on by and say hello, please. Love to see you there. All right, we got to go. That's it. We will see you at one of the above or more. Until we meet again, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.